bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. I'm Ewan Rankin, and we're going to discuss the week's photo news. Slightly reduced panel. In fact, there's only one of them, and that would be Mr. Fox. How you doing, mate?
I'm okay. Do you want me to do different voices and have?
Yeah, you could pretend to be someone else, couldn't you? That'd be great. That'd be really good. The week in photographic news has not been huge, it has to be said, but in a vain attempt to try and get something out there before the iPhone 5 comes out next week, Nokia have had a little press event to do with their new phone. It's the Nokia Lumia 920, and allegedly it cares an awful lot about mobile photography. This thing has got, is it an 8.7 megapixel camera?
Mm-hmm.
Which seems rather good. It's got a beautiful, beautiful screen as well, an AMOLED screen. And it's supposed to be very, very good. Now, it's based on the same principle as the 800 was, wasn't it? This thing with the 41 megapixel that wasn't.
Yeah, but they're not using exactly the same technology. They're using bits of that. They're not going for the oversampling of all the pixels.
Yeah.
They're just using, I think it might even be the same sensor, but they're just using it as a one-stop shop. They're not, you know, trying to do anything too clever with it. Not on the sensor part, but they're doing some incredibly clever bits on the other parts.
Yeah, I mean, it's got this floating lens image stabilization, which they reckon's really good.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, what their quote was, I mean, even if you take the lowest end of their quote was it can bring in up between 5 and 10 times the amount of light that any other camera on a phone can do.
Well, you pointed this out. I mean, you put in the doc a picture of the first test shot. I'll just show it there. So talk us through that image now.
Okay, right. Well, the first test shot is basically iPhone 4S, which purports to be the best camera phone on the market, against this Nokia 920.
And we would have agreed up until this week.
Oh, well, until a couple of days ago, when I said, yeah, the iPhone 4S is a pretty decent camera. But what this thing is doing, because of the quality of the image stabilization and it's an f2.0 lens, etc., you can get low light pictures like you could never get before. It doesn't really help if you're on audio only, but to sum it up, is the iPhone has got a very, very blurry, very underexposed image of, well, to be honest, unless I'd seen the Nokia version, I wouldn't even know what the iPhone was trying to show me.
Exactly.
It looks like a brown blob with a few brown highlights. The same setup, exactly, the same time, the same lighting. You've got this Nokia that's got a vibrant bunch of yellow and red and white flowers in a blue and white vase. And the difference is, it's almost like someone taking something called F32 on one phone and F1.8 on another. That is the difference.
Dramatic. I think the point, you would probably look at the other image and say to yourself, well, it's not exactly, it's a usable image. It could be very grainy as well because you're only seeing it on an LCD screen. You're not seeing it at 100%. So it might not be a very usable image, but just as a demonstration of what it can capture in terms of the dynamic range, it's a killer.
Yeah, but I mean, it's this image stabilization that's going to... We have talked for ages about, if you like, the ladies handbag camera phone.
Yeah.
Because we've always said it is so frustrating to see utter rubbish on places like Facebook, where there's someone's in a bar and you're like, I'm sure that is them, but you'd need something that the CIA had to try and sharpen it enough and refocus it enough to work out who it was in the picture.
Yeah.
Utterly pointless photography. And this thing is trying to cater for the point and shoot in a nightclub type person. And you know what? In the Western world, I'd reckon that's 90% of people that use camera phones.
Mm.
And it'd be interesting to see if they can patent this technology to see what anyone else could come up with. Because if this is as good as it looks, then the others have got to come up with something quite extraordinary to match it.
Well, now it's funny you should say that, because if this is as good as it looks, there has been a bit of a furore this week, because Nokia sent out a little video showing how good it actually was, and they showed you this picture of a girl riding along that was supposedly taken from another bloke riding next to her on another bicycle. And it showed how good the IS was. Unfortunately, if you look very closely at the image, however, you're going to see that in the window of the little truck opposite, the guy that's taking the picture is actually a bloke in a van. It's not a bloke who's cycling next to her. And also, he's carrying a DSLR. He's not carrying a Nokia Lumia. So, liar, liar, pants on fire. Utterly, utterly faked. Disgusting. Any thoughts on that one? He talked about faking news reportage and that kind of thing, you know, photoshopping the film. At least they haven't photoshopped it, but
I agree. I mean, the admission to faking this was, I think it was only admission to faking this one part of the sequence. It's actually quite a long video.
Yeah.
And I want desperately, and not to belittle anyone else's attempt, I want desperately Nokia to have got this right. One, I really admire Nokia as a company and always have. Two, but I want the camera technology to move on to a level where it's as good as they purport it to be. So in that respect, I want Nokia to have achieved what they claim to have achieved. And just as a side issue, someone's got an awful lot of time on their hands to have spotted that.
Well, no, but I mean, there's Tenex in the chat room's put a link in as well that explains it all, and it's apparently it's not the first time that Nokia have been caught with their trousers down around this. So,
okay, well, I'm like I say, I want more than anything, I want the camera technology to be right.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people the tweets, which is where I saw the so called faking up of this. I say so called. If it is fake, it's fake. But it was all this sort of glorious Apple fanboy business. And I was like, but what is the benefit in Nokia not achieving what they say they've achieved? Because it's a benefit for all of us. If Nokia can make a camera that is so superior to the 4S and maybe even the upcoming 5, it means the next iPhone or the next Android and the next this, that and the other is going to have to be better. So instead of knocking it, get behind it, because it's going to be better for all of us, whatever we buy in the future. That's my argument anyway.
So, I mean, is this going to pull you away from the iPhone and towards Nokia instead, or you still
devout? Do you want the honest truth?
Go on.
I've still got an iPhone 4. I've been out of contract for ages and ages and ages. And I saw this and I thought, you know what? I'm really, really, I know this isn't a phone program, but I'm really sick of, and we had a discussion last night, my iPhone and all the iPhones I've ever had in London drop calls all the time. And I'm actually afraid to try and run a business on an iPhone, because the amount of calls I've dropped, it's really frustrating.
Are you on 4 or 4S?
I'm on 4. But I've got a 4S as well that I use at work, and it drops just as much.
Since I went to 4S, I haven't dropped a single call.
Oh, well, I've got...
Never lose it.
A nightmare. And I've got the 4S on Vodafone and the 4 on O2, so they're even different networks.
Yeah.
But the point is, if this has got a half-decent camera, it's very useful for me at work to have a point-and-shoot facility camera, because of when I, certain times I shoot things, I need to, I know it sounds tough, but quite often there's a wall full of paintings, and I pull this wall to bits, and sometimes I'm expected to put it back again.
Yeah.
I use my iPhone and various things like that to actually shoot the wall before I start, so I know I've put the room back when I'm finished.
Yeah.
And there's loads of little things. I mean, you probably do it as well. There's loads of little things. A point and shoot with a screen that you can see is really, really useful. And I just thought, when I saw this, I was thinking, you know what? I really like this. I could keep my iPhone and have all the things I've already paid for, but I could use this as an actual phone and a point and shoot, and I won't have the problems I've got with the iPhone. So when you say, has this drawn me over to Nokia, I can honestly say, yes, it has.
Mm. Windows 8 interface is supposed to be very good as well. So with the camera thing, then, yeah, it could be the reason to dump everything and move over.
I also think it's a very pretty looking thing.
Yeah, no, you can make the casing, you can make the Metro E type interface, but you're not allowed to say Metro, into the same color as your casing, so you get a lot of synchronicity and stuff there.
It's about time someone else came up with a bit of design, and I think they have, and I'm quite impressed with that.
But absolutely.
Camera basics, brilliant.
D600, allegedly, there's a press event that's been outed from Nokia. It's coming on September the 13th, so it's the day after the iPhone comes out, and everyone's expecting the full-frame D600 to come out. Pete talked in the chat room last week and asked a question about whether he should buy a D5100, but you're saying that you think the D5200 might be out next week.
Yeah, I mean, that's been rumoured about the same amount of time as the D600, but the thing is, I mean, good for Pete for buying it, but if the D5200 was coming out that quickly, I imagine the shops or Amazon, whoever, will know, and they'd have started reducing the price of the 5100 to clear stock. Because let's face it, once the 5200 comes out, if you're going to buy new, you're not going to buy the 5100 for the same price. So hopefully, for Pete's sake, that's a good one. it's not due that soon, but I mean, the rumors on the 5200 is just basically an improved sensor and slightly improved video, but for 99.9% of people, the 5100 is more than enough camera.
Yeah,
it's a lovely bit of kit.
I think the 5100 would serve you well if you got a decent price. I mean, if they're anticipating it, they tend to pull the prices down just before release anyway, so you probably got a pretty good deal. D600. Looking forward to this one. I mean, this is the poor man's D800, isn't it? $2,000-ish.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of same level as D700 was or is.
Yeah.
I just think Nikon keep doing it. You know, now they're talking about an entry-level full-frame camera for, I don't know what they're talking about, price, probably around $1,500.
Yeah.
So what's that, £900 to £1,000, which is similar to the 700 is at the moment on a deal. 24 megapixel, it's going to have fantastic video. I mean, I'm trying to think, is it the Canon 5D Mark II?
Yeah, that's £2,500 ish, so $3,000, $4,000.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what Canon's entry level full frame is, but it's sort of a similar.
It's the 5.
It is the 5.
Yeah.
Canon got to do something, because if this is even half as good as the 800.
Well, what have they got to do, though? I mean, this is a point. I think if you're talking about refreshing lines and that kind of stuff, there's no doubt about it that Canon haven't really refreshed the line as a whole. But you've got the 1D has come out. You've got the 5D Mark III came out 8 months ago. The 600, the 650, the 650A. You know, those have all come out. And the thing is, I mean, I bought a 600 just to try and shoot video and see what it looked like. And I've had a lot of video work just lately. And I'm sitting thinking to myself, I think I'll upgrade. I'll get a better video camera. And I went down to Calumet and I had a play with a 60D. And I had a play with the Mark II. The video is identical. I cannot tell the difference between that and the D600. So am I going to buy a £600 camera that shoots 1080p video, which is perfectly adequate, or am I going to buy a £4,000 camera that shoots 1080p that's perfectly adequate? And if I want stills, I've still got my 1DS Mark II, which I ain't going to change because I still haven't found a better sensor than that at the top end anyway.
Yeah, but I mean,
so what am I going to change? What do Canon need to change?
Well, the thing is, I mean, you're talking as someone, one, who's already got lenses.
Yeah.
And two, somebody that's already got the ability to shoot high quality stills. What Canon have got to change is they've got to change the fact that if you're new, say you didn't have any camera or any lenses, or even a third or fourth, you know, you could have a Pentax or you could have a Sony. If you were looking to start from scratch tomorrow, unless you had I want to use the word prejudice, because I think we pick cameras not on what we like. It's that it's almost prejudice against other companies. It's really strange the way we do it. Same with computers. You know, there's nothing wrong with a decent Windows machine, but we're prejudiced because we want to be Apple, or people that don't like Apple want to be Windows. You know, so it's all prejudicial. Now, if you've got nothing, I would say...
You're looking at who's making the most noise. I'll grant you that.
but also the most quality.
Oh,
I mean, I don't know,
no.
for instance, what Pete paid for the 5100, but for the price of that, you can't get anything near that quality on a Canon at the moment. This is a full frame entry level at, say, £800, £900, £1,000, which means because it's full frame entry level, you can use high end lenses. You can hire high end lenses. You've got, see, face basically, as long as you've got a half decent or three quarter decent sensor on a full frame camera, you can produce the most amazing pictures as long as you can get hold of a decent lens. The difference with the DX cameras is that, you know, you can use a full size lens, but you're not getting the full benefit of it. This is the entry level, if you like, if you want to do pro stuff. Now, it's not necessarily good enough to use as a day-to-day pro camera, but if you want to go out and you want to do some decent landscaping, you want to hire a £5,000 lens for the weekend, you are going to get unbelievably good pictures out of this camera.
I think the other thing though to question though, Alex, is you go back 12 months and the thought process was that as far as stills went, Nikon had significantly the edge. They were better at high ISO. They had less noise at high ISO than Canon. That's still probably true of the case now. But Canon have pulled themselves an awful lot closer to that standard, and the high ISO, low noise stuff is a lot better than it ever was. And at 12 months ago, everyone was saying Canon shoots better video than Nikon pretty consistently. And that's still the case, though. And it doesn't look like Nikon have got any closer to Canon. For a budget range, Canon has got a camera which is good now on stills, but not as good as Nikon, and is at least equal or better than on video.
Yeah, I mean, I would have said that was definitely true until the D800 because of the video on the D800, you know, it's still 1080 and it's still, you know, it's the same.
Yeah, but we're not talking about that price range. We're talking about the £600 mark.
Yeah, but I mean, as I'm saying, this D600, from what I've read previous, is going to have exactly the same video system as the D800.
Yeah.
Now, I would have said that because of the low noise that you get in the D800 and the fact that, you know, it's the same as everything else. You can get less... You can use less light, if you like. You can have a sharper image. You don't have to be at 1.8. You can have a sharper image in darker situations and still produce a noise-free image. On video, and also because of with blur and things, it's an advantage to be able to stop down a bit. You're going to get, on a beautiful bright day, there's probably nothing to compare. On a beautiful bright day outside, the majority of half-decent video on DSLRs is going to be fine. It's when you get into those tricky situations, you get quick night and the blur and things like that, because you're not going to expose. You don't take a video at night and want to overexpose it so you can see what's going on. You want to show night. It's not like with a camera. You know, you don't have a five-second on tripod exposure on video. It doesn't work the same way.
Mm.
But what you need to do is be able to shoot it in the right lighting situation, e.g. if it's dark, then you want a dark image, but you don't want that image to have any noise. And that's where the Nikons have got an advantage.
Yeah. Okay, good debate. Don't know who's going to win that one, but...
Pentax.
Absolutely. Calumet have... We'll give them a bit of a plug while we just mentioned them. Calumet have got some workshops running at the moment if you want to go and see them. They're actually at Drummond Street in London, Manchester, Birmingham, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Bristol and Belfast. You can book in and it's going to cost you, I think, let me find the story, £100, was it?
It normally works about 100 for a day or 50 for half day.
Yeah, here we go. It's Calumet, £50 to £100, depending on the time of the course, one day or half day. And... a whole pile of seminars. If you want to go, then go to calumetseminars.co.uk and you can book on there and see what they've got. And they're usually pretty good, aren't they? I've been to one.
Yeah, there's certain things that I don't do in photography, and I've got to be honest, I tend to just stick my head around and pay attention for a little while. And there's people that specialise in specialist bits of photography, but they'll take you from novice to expert. And there's a few things here. You know, if you're into photography, I can't think off the top of my head which branch was doing which, but they do rotate anyway. And they'll do like a half day on digital workflow from the beginning. You know, so you're a novice. And it will say, look, this is the best way to set up your camera. This is the best way to set up your color. This is the best workflow for you to start with. And it's, we don't all want to go on a year's course on basic photography, because as much as it might be fun, we don't have time. But if you're in this sort of situation, if you're really keen, and obviously £50 isn't an awful lot of
no, it's good money.
Money, is it? If you're really keen, you're going to pick up from some real experts. They're going to have the equipment for you. They're going to have the software for you. You're going to learn more in half a day than you probably would in 6 months on some course in some adult education college. So, you know, if you want a refresher, or you want to say, look, you know what, I'm really interested in portraiture, but I've got no idea, do a half day or a day at somewhere organized by Calumet in one of their stores, and you'll leave there not only informed, you'll leave there excited to get out there and do what it is you've learned. So I think they're very, very good value, and that's why I thought it was worth giving them a mention.
No, absolutely. Definitely worth giving them a mention. Fuji have released the XE1. This looks rather nice. It's a 16-megapixel sensor. It comes with some little interchangeable lenses, and ISO range is 100 to 25,600. 3-inch LCD on the back. It looks pretty small. Maximum aperture goes down to 2.8. Retail price $1,400, which is a bit of an ouch, and it'll be out in November.
It's not as much of an ouch as the last lot, was it?
No, not too bad.
No,
if,
I mean,
if they, as long as they get the conversion rate right, then that'll probably be, you know, sit around the £800 mark in the UK, which it's a good camera and they take nice little pictures, but they're kind of pushing that Leica thing with me, you know, about how much better are they for the extra that you're paying for them.
But it's like that with, you know, it's like that with anything now, isn't it? You could buy a stereo, oh, that gives me my age, wouldn't it? A stereo system. And you could spend £400 on a stereo system that will sound 95% as good as a £5,000 system.
Yeah.
It's just that extra 5 or 10%, and you have to pay through the nose for it. And I think that's sort of what Fuji are doing. I mean, firstly, Fuji have absolutely, in my eyes, cracked the design of these cameras. I think, I mean, Fuji went from really plasticky and horrible to these. They're not retro. They're better than retro. They look better than the cameras they're trying to ape from years ago. I think they're wonderful. I think they look extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, there's one that's very much got that kind of very old Olympus feel to it, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'd love my DSLRs to be DSLR-looking versions of these.
Or even a Rolleiflex. Do you remember the old the metal-top Rolleiflex?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's my age, or maybe it's because of I like the history of photography. But, you know, I've got magnesium alloy cameras covered in black, horrible plastic. And, you know, why can't I say the magnesium alloy? It's a lot prettier than the horrible plastic.
I mean, I think the thing I like about this as well is that they've kept it very simple. It's very boxy. It's very square. The controls are easily identified. If the menus are a bit more intuitive in terms of the GUI, then they're onto a real winner. But it's just that price. It just seems this is an awful lot of money to pay in a market that's, you know, you look at the G3 market. You're getting interchangeable lenses of G3 at a more universal format with the Micro Four Thirds than this, and it just seems to me that it's.
I think it will come down though. I think this is sort of, you know, if this sort of look or this sort of camera takes off, then they'll be selling shipment loads rather than a few hundred.
Shipment loads, very good, mate.
But I tell you what else I like. If you look on the top, it's got an old fashioned screw in remote control. You know,
yeah.
Remote called. It's little things like that means you don't have to go and buy some proprietary electronic, you know, remote. I mean, I've got electronic remotes, and I must have 5 different types for 5 different cameras, even though they're Nikons. They're not all compatible. Some are 7-pin.
Has it got a ball on the end that you need to squeeze to push the air down?
Exactly. But I've got ones here that I've paid £60 for, and all they are is an electronic button. I've got one that was about £180. It's got all these numbers on it, and you can look at the exposure, and it's got a little screen on it. And I never use it. I use the one which is an electronic button, but it still costs me £50. And all it is a button. If I had two wires and I could stick them together and make the circuit, it would still take the picture.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with screwing it in and manually just pushing down on the button, the same as you did in the old days. As for the, you know, what this camera's going to be capable of, I have every faith in Fuji and what they've produced recently from the X100, and they did an X10 as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I've got every faith that you buy one of these cameras, you're not going to be, you're going to be very happy with what it outputs. And let's face it.
You get one free.
Yeah. But let's face it, if I was walking around somewhere and I didn't want to carry a DSLR, I'd love to be carrying around something that looked like this.
Yeah.
It'd make me feel like a real photographer.
Right. Questions. Shall we do some questions? Your questions. Three great questions this week. Thank you very much to Brett and Lee who've sent them in. Hi, Ewan. This is Brett. I bought a photo shirt and I asked a question about lenses about 6 months ago for a crop sensor NX5. After 6 months of being happy with the image quality of the photos with the NX5, even with other lenses, Sigma 30mm f/1.4, which is good, I decided the only way to know once and for all if I'm a crap photographer or just a bad judge of equipment, I flogged the NX on eBay and bought a Canon 5D off Craigslist. I looked out and the camera is in perfect condition. This did answer my self-doubt because matched with the Nifty 50, the photos look remarkably better. So my faith is restored. Well done, mate. Now the bad news. As the camera is 5 years old and the shutter has a finite life expectancy, I realised I've been averaging 300 clicks per week at about 10 decent photos to show for that. That within the next year, I'm going to have to replace the shutter. Question is, one, other than sending it back to Canon, whom I'm not sure I trust to give me straight dope, they're in the business, not the friend's business. Is there a shop or service that could give me a shutter actuation count for my 5D Mark I? All of the inline programs cannot do Mark I. Online programs can't do Mark I. I would have said probably yes. In terms of service, they don't do anything. Most places that are authorised Canon places will send it to, I think in the UK there's only three authorised Canon repair facilities. I'm pretty sure of that. So, what about online count? I didn't know the firmware gave you the count. I mean, you should be able to get the count off the image number.
I'm sure my Nikon just give you a count.
The 5D's not an IMG count, is it? It's a YRX count, so it should be unique. And that should be able to tell you what you started on. Anyway.
The only other thing I'd say, to be honest, is I've got cameras here, Nikons, the much of a muchness is in the wear and tear on them, that I hate to think, 10,000, 50,000, the one of my cameras I've used, more or less messing around with, for about 3 or 4 years, and, you know, I shoot thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of images. The count on your shutter should go up to something like 100,000, maybe more.
If it's an IMG count, it only goes to 10,000. But I didn't think.
But I'm saying it should go. I mean, you should get 100,000. It might be like a million. It's some extraordinary amount of shutters, shutter clicks before you've even got to worry about it, wearing out.
I think the other thing as well, though, mate, is that if you've got some, you should look at your images, and the images will tell you when to change things. Because if you start to see light leaks or degrades or shutter values aren't really, you think your shutter in at 1/125th, and then when you get it back, there's some movement because it looks like it's more like 1/30th. Then go and get it sorted out. But as long as it's taking a good image, that's all your camera needs to do. And I don't think your shutter's going to wear out that quickly. I think 5 years is more than acceptable. I agree with Alex.
I mean, I've got stuff. When I do, there's certain stuff I do that, you know, I do on continuous shoot. So I might do 3,000 shutter clicks in a day.
Yeah.
And I've got cameras that have done 3,000 shutter clicks, maybe only 2 or 3 times a week, but for 5 years. I mean, I really don't know what you're worrying about. I don't mean to belittle the question in any way.
No.
You've really got to, A full-time pro could probably use a camera for 5 years and really, really heavy usage before he'd have to worry about the shutter. And I've got to also be honest, if you, I don't know what you paid for it, but by the time you have it surfaced is one thing, but if you do get anything like the shutter housing or anything changed, you might as well buy a new camera.
Yeah, and I mean, my DS Mark II, I dread to think how many pictures it's taken. It's got to be well into the 40s and 50,000s in the last 8 years that I've had it.
Well, so. I've done countless more than that. Yeah. And one of my Nikons, I had to have something changed after about 4 years, because I never get rid of them. I buy new cameras, I never get rid of the old cameras. And I still, they're like old faithful, and I sort of take them with, I think, well, I don't need such high resolution. I'm going to use this because I know how to use this and I'm confident with the settings on it and everything else. And one camera I've had in the last 10 years that needed a repair. And that's it. And yeah. I don't treat them nicely either. So I wouldn't worry too much. And if it goes wrong, it goes wrong. Get it repaired then. But don't look for problems, because I don't think there probably is one.
Cool. Question two, can you give me a precise workflow for shooting, i.e. first you should set your ISO, then your f-stop, then your shutter. This would cut down on the amount of wasted shots I have before I realised that the camera wasn't turned on or whatever. I mean, I thought, to be honest, I would have said that if I turn up somewhere, I was shooting this week on a railway, and I'd go outside and I'd look at the light and I'd think, well, you know, what I'm shooting today is going to have some movement in it, not an awful lot, not super fast paced, and I've got good sunlight today, so no question I'm going to be shooting at ISO at 100, and then that's set for the time that it's there. I think Tuesday it got a little bit grimmer, and I think on a couple of the shots where people were moving, I got it up to 200. But I get an idea in my head of how fast my capture's got to be, and then after that I set the shot depending on what it is I'm artistically trying to capture, whether I want to make sure I get everything in, so I go for f11 and then try and compensate and have aperture priority, or when I want 2.8 to knock out the background. So I would say ISO is a thing that I set, but not per shot. It'd be set before I start shooting. Alex?
Well, again, I'm not going to be very helpful here. It all depends on what the image you're trying to shoot is.
Well, exactly, I mean, then, but that's the point.
I don't care about... In mine, with works of art, I want the ISO as low as I can get because I don't want any noise whatsoever. So I go down to...
Yeah, I think we've got to be careful not to talk about what we shoot necessarily, yeah, saying, because this is...
Giving it an example, yeah. The point is, so I don't care. So I go ISO as low as I can. Speed isn't an issue for me because it's on a tripod and nothing moves. And what matters to me is the f-stop. Now, if you're doing something like sport, what matters is the speed of it. So you've got to get your aperture open as wide as possible so that you can get the speed as fast as you need it. And because of the type of shot you're taking, the ISO is actually the least important, because you're better off with a good shot that's slightly grainy than a non-grainy shot that is blurred. So what I'm saying is there is no fixed workflow. It all depends on what you're trying to shoot and what you're trying to get out of it. Because of what I'd say is there's certain, if you like, there's a priority, and that's one of the reasons cameras have priority modes, because the point is in a different shot the priority is a different thing. So pick you need to work out what type of shot you're doing. So in my respect, is for what I do for work, the priority is going to be aperture and the other two are secondary. Actually, I've got a third because I control the amount of light as well. If you're doing sport, then speed has got to be the priority. So then, you know, there's no point in taking a blurry shot. If you're doing landscaping, perhaps the ISO would be the priority with the aperture balanced off. So there is no set workflow. It's a set workflow on different types of photography. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I think that's fine. I agree. Absolutely. I mean, in terms of ISO, like I said, I tend to get a feel for what I'm doing that day and what the conditions are like, and then I'll just keep an eye on the conditions and change that as I go, and then I'll switch between usually aperture priority. I mean, probably 90% of what I shoot is aperture priority based. It's not shutter priority. So
artistically, that's normally what you need to work with.
Yeah. And question three on his list, my second lens purchase was a Sigma 70-300 4-5.6. I was inspired by the lady across the street who walks around with no clothes on. Just kidding. The Sigma is reputed to be sharp at 200 and soft at 3. Do you think I will get any sharper? No, you won't. It's a full frame sensor, so you're going to be getting 200 is going to be 200 and 300 is going to be 300, and it's going to be soft. It's a cheap lens, so.
Yeah, even with a cheap lens, though, you know, if you don't necessarily use a bicubic sharpening that comes with something like Photoshop Elements or something, but there is ways and means. Sharpening is one of the most important things you need to learn software-wise with any photo system. So if you work out what the type of sharpening you want is, a slight bit of softness isn't necessarily a bad thing, because you can sharpen elements of the picture that absolutely make things punch out. You wouldn't believe the difference of sharpening. If you've got a picture and you shoot it slightly soft, just sharpening certain elements, maybe an eye or two eyes is normally a good idea, but if you sharpen only certain elements, it actually improves the picture. So to shoot a picture very sharp all the time isn't necessarily the best thing, you know, especially artistically. So, you know, 200, it should be fine. 250 is probably fine, but 300, it's not a waste of time, but it's, you know, if you actually want something pin sharp, don't bother with 300.
No.
But like I say, there is a usefulness of that softness at 300 if you learn how to use it to your advantage.
Yeah, generally with a lot of those lenses where you've got extreme zoom ranges, just come back a quarter turn and that'll be, don't get greedy. And anything else that you need, you can do it by crop. 140% of original shot will give you still an equal quality. You won't get a drop on it. Good point. P.S. as well, on last week's photo show you mentioned Scott Kelby books as one of your favourites. I went and bought one and it was great. The reason I trust you is I'm a dyslexic, I play the guitar and I love beer. Thanks, Brett. Question two is from Lee in Bromsgrove. Hi all, you guys are the best. I love the show. Thanks very much, mate. I've got a Canon 7D and have a 50mm f1.8 lens plus the 15-85mm. I'm looking for some extra reach and I'm torn between the Tamron 70-300 with IS or the Canon 70-200 non-IS. These would be for people, photography, etc., and not sports. I know that you said that for zooms up to 330, the last quarter turn is useless. Would this also be the case for the Canon lens? If it's the L-series lens, I would have said no, because that's probably a fixed ISO. That's not fixed ISO. It's probably a fixed...
aperture.
Fixed aperture you can hold. So you can have 2.8 all the way up. The ones that get soft are the ones that go 4-5.6 or something like that, or 3.5-5.6. It's when they change the aperture rating with it. I've got the 200, the 70-200 IS, and it's pin sharp all the way along, but that's the £3,000 lens. So
yeah, but I mean, without the IS, I mean, I find image stabilization lenses hateful, but that's just me. The 70-200, if it's, you know, a Canon owned 70-200 without image stabilization, I reckon you might be slightly soft at 200, but you'll be fine at 190. You know, it's got less to go wrong with it, if you like. It's got less to be soft about. It's got less to have a problem with.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is with the Tamron, the 300, you probably need image stabilization to counteract the fact that it's a 300. So if you're happy to go up to 200, I'd have said that Canon lens would be spot on.
Yeah, it's fixed 4.0 all the way up as well, so that's going to be sharp.
The less variables, I mean, you know, you don't have so many elements that are trying to, you know, bend the light to compensate for the length and all the rest of it. So, you know, I'd have said the 70-200 is probably going to be a very good lens.
Plus, it's a Canon cream lens. It's not a black lens. And once you've got a cream lens, mate, you're a proper photographer.
Oh, that makes all the difference.
That's why all the Nikon fans are lusting after Canon, because you get to have a beige lens, you see.
I'm going to paint all mine pink.
You've arrived. Did you see my photo the other day of the moon?
I did. It looks exactly like it looked when I took a picture.
Well, I've gone again now, and I've taken me 400mm. And I've stuck two times converters on the end of it. And I'm having trouble keeping it still, it has to be said.
You can get tablets for that.
I've put it on a crop sensor, so that's 400. 800, 1600, 3200, plus it's on a crop sensor, so that should be about 4,000, 5,000, shouldn't it?
Have you managed to see the Hasselblad then that they left on the surface?
See, I'm going to try that later tonight. If the moon's out, well, the moon's out this morning as well, so I might not get it, but I shall be going and having a play later tonight.
Yeah. I love the photography. Results. I mean, I did some
for
the Flickr group ages ago.
It's easy to get close, isn't it?
Yeah, but I love lunar photography. It's one of those things that just, you know, sometimes it's really good to not feel important. And you sort of sit there taking a picture of the moon and you just become a dot in your own mind. And that's quite healthy sometimes. I advise everyone to do that. Yeah. Landscape photography as well. You know, there's a reason why we go for walks in the country and things. And there's something very natural and there's something really...
I'm crap at that though.
Inspirational, because you're not, it's not so much the image that matters, you've got to feel what you're taking a picture of in the country.
Crap at landscape.
I'm sure
my dad was good. My dad was a really good landscape photographer, but I'm crap. There we go. Buy the lens, buy the Canon, no question. Well done, Lee. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll read it out. It'll go in the doc. We'll all have a question, we'll all have a throw out an answer and see if he can test us and catch us out. Mr. Forsman's away this week, but he's back next week as normal. And Kev, I think, is coming back as well next week. So we'll be back up to a four-man panel. Where can we get a hold of you, Alex?
You get me on Twitter if you really want. Alex G. Fox. I had some people ask me questions that don't even follow me. So I don't know how they do that. They must have found out that I'm the font of no knowledge and written to me.
Yeah. Ian, I stuck a 1-2 times converter on my 70 to 200 and couldn't hardly track the moon across the sky. We're leaning against something. I shot the picture I shot the other day, I shot freehand with 3-2 times converters on it. I think it was ISO 800. But the 400, I can't even keep it steady on a tripod at the moment, so I ain't going to be shooting it freehand. Drink less SP. Good lad. We'll be back again next week. Have a great photo week. Take some pictures and send them to us. Thanks for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.